Well then, welcome everybody to the string seminar. And today we're happy to have Shota Komatsu from CERN with us, who's going to be telling us about D-brains and orbit averages. Please take it away.
Okay. All right. So thanks for inviting, and it's always a pleasure to come back to Perimeter, although it's virtual. So today I'm going to talk about recent work that that we submitted like last month, well, 2 months ago. And it's the work together with Yunfeng Zhang, who is a postdoc at CERN, and Peihei Yan and Junbao Wu, and who are in Tianjin University in China. And Peihei is a student of Junbao. And the subject of the talk is about computing correlation functions of deep brains holographically. And so this is the plan of the talk. I will first explain some relation of our setup with what people normally call like a large charge expansion of the conformal field theory, explaining the similarities and the relation with the idea explored by explored in that context. And then I'm going to give a review of computation of correlation functions of deep brains. And then I explained it, several puzzles that were encountered in the literature. And then I'm going to present a new approach which resolves all those puzzles. And then I'm going to end with the discussion about the possibility of generalizing the approach to deep black holes and fuzzballs. Okay, that's the plan. So let's start with the introduction. So as I said, the main subject of the talk is to compute correlation functions in ADS-CFT holographically. And as we all know, that ADS-CFT relates some operator in conformal field theory with some excitation in ADS spacetime. And so the very rough geometric picture is that if you insert some operator in ADS, then that's going to emit some particle inside ADS. At the boundary of ADS, then it's going to emit some particle inside ADS. And depending on the dimension of the operators, you get various different states in the ADS. And for example, if you consider operator with order one dimension, and that's going to be dual to gravitons or some light matter fields in ADS spacetime. And whereas if you consider, if you take large N CFT, and if you consider operators with dimension of order N, then that's going to give you deep brains in ADS spacetime. And finally, if you consider operators with dimension order n square, and then what you are going to get is some deformed geometry. So you no longer get ADS, but you get some deformed geometry. And depending on the operator you consider, you either get some like a smooth geometry without horizon, like what people call LLM geometry or fuzzball geometries, or you might get some black holes, which has horizon and which comes with exponential degeneracy. And on top of that, I should mention that there are also some massive stringy states, which you normally don't discuss if you just talk about supergravity in ADS, but in principle, they are there. And that's in between this graviton state and deep brain state, okay? And also, one thing I want to emphasize is that in many cases, operators with large dimension often come with other large quantum numbers. For example, U1R charge J, or sometimes like it comes with spin. And the reason why it often comes with other large quantum numbers is because like if you consider such operators, it's actually very easy to construct a large charge large dimension operator. Because oftentimes, because of unitarity and other constraints, this dimension of the operator must be larger than J or S. And in my talk, I'm going to focus on a case where operators come with large U1R charge J. So, So when you talk about like operators with a very large charge in conformal field theory, there are like a completely different line of research, which is not directly, not necessarily related to ADS-CFT correspondence, which is often called large charge expansion in conformal field theory. So this was initiated by these people and further explored by these people. And one, like one simplest and important, the most important consequence of this large charge expansion in conformal field theory is semi-universal prediction of conformal field theory data in the large charge limit, where J is the large charge. And the prediction is that if you consider operators with large charge in generic CFT in D dimension, then the dimension of the operator should scale as J to D over D minus one. And deriving this is actually very simple. So the idea is to first start with the conformal field theory on a cylinder, or more precisely RT times SD minus one with radius R. And then you ask, what is the energy of the state living on SD minus one? And this is basically given by delta, which is the operator dual to the state, over R. And this is just a dimensional analysis, because in conformal field theory, there is no other scale. So in order to get something that scale that has the correct mass dimension, you need to divide by R. And on the other hand, the charge of the state is precisely the same as the charge of the operator. And if you further assume that if you take the large radius limit, this large charge state becomes a state in flat space, because if you take a large radius limit, then this SD minus one decompactifies and becomes just a flat space. And if you assume that in this limit, the state in CFT becomes a state in flat space with finite energy and finite charge densities, then you would conclude that energy in this limit should scale like this. Well, this is again just like a dimensional analysis, where epsilon is the energy density. And similarly, a charge should scale like this, where J is the charge density. Okay. And by combining these two relations, this relation and this relation, then you conclude that dimension of the operator delta should scale like R to D in the large R limit. And this should be equal to J to D over D minus one. So this is the simple derivation of this universal relation. And what those people did is not just deriving this universal relation, but they also analyze the 1 over J corrections using the effective field theory methods. Okay, is there any questions so far? Okay, so however, as I wrote here, this is a semi-universal prediction, and there are CFTs for which this prediction is not correct. And one simple example is the superconformal field theory, because in the superconformal field theory, we know that there are BPS states whose dimension scale linearly with respect to the charge. And this is, of course, like a much, much smaller than J to D over D minus one in the large J limit. And the reason why the previous argument was wrong is because if you take BPS operator or BPS state in superconformal field theory and then take the large radius limit, then it actually doesn't go over to a state with a finite energy density. On the other, by contrast, you get actually a state on a flat space with zero energy. And just because, like, if you consider supersymmetric field theory, oftentimes there is a flat direction, and you can consider a state on a vacuum manifold. And for instance, in the case of n equals two superconformal field theory in 4D, it was shown that you can actually compute a large charge expansion of this superconformal field theory using the Coulomb branch effective field theory, which basically describes the effective field theory on a vacuum manifold, which is just a flat direction. So which is basically obtained by giving some VEV to some vector multiplet scalar. And the leading action is given by this universal form. The leading term is just like a free theory, And then there are also higher derivative corrections. And in particular, for rank one n equals two superconformal field theory, which comes with one dimensional Coulomb branch moduli, they computed the 2-point function using the effective field theory and made a prediction that it should scale like j factorial times something to the power 2j and j to alpha, where this alpha is related to the difference between the anomaly of the original CFT and the anomaly in the IR, which is basically anomaly of this effective field theory, a anomaly of this field theory. And what's nice about this computation is that you can actually compare this result against the localization computation performed in this paper, and you can see that the result matches precisely. Okay, so any questions? Good. Okay, so this was done and explored by many people for the rank one n equals two superconformal field theory, but basically no work has been done for higher rank theories, and the analysis actually gets much more complicated for a theory with higher rank theories, by which I mean like theories with multi-dimensional Coulomb branch. And there are a couple of reasons why this is more difficult. And the first reason is that if you consider such theories, for example, like one example of such theory is that n equals four Zipan Mills with gauge group SUN, where n is larger than two. But if you consider those theories, then there are more possibilities of giving a VEV to a scalar field and then getting some symmetry breaking patterns. For example, if you consider like n equals four Zipan Mills theory with SU2 gauge group, then if, as soon as you go to the Coulomb branch, like the symmetry you get is like a broken, well, SU2 is broken to U1 times U1. However, if you consider SU3 series, then you can have like, you can go to a Coulomb branch in which the symmetry is broken down to U1 to Q, U1 to 3, or like in special cases, like you can get a U1 times SU2. And the second difficulty, so this is that like a classification of supersymmetric higher derivative terms gets more complicated if you consider higher rank theories. And those are difficulties associated with the with writing down the effective field theory. And on top of that, if you just consider like a consider the analysis on the CFT side, the analysis gets complicated because in this case, there is some degeneracy of BPS operators. So if you consider say like SU2 n equals four Zipan Mills, then there is basically a single operator for each, for single like a BPS operator for each charge, half BPS operator with each for each charge, which is like a trace to Z2 2J. And using the trace relation, you can also show that this is the same as trace z squared to j. And on the other hand, if you consider SUN theory, then this operator and this operator is generically different. So when you talk about like a large charge operator or large charge state, you actually need more information to specify before starting to analyze the do the large charge expansion. And finally, from the localization side, okay, this comment probably like doesn't make sense to most people unless you work on the problem. But on the localization side, like in order to get the result for the large charge correlation function, you do need to do some kind of Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization. But that gets complicated if you consider series with higher rank Coulomb branch. Okay, so there are all these difficulties, but let me just show that like the problem one and three are actually like very much related. And in order to see why they are related, it's useful to consider some kind of simple toy model, which is complex matrix model. So it's just like a zero dimensional field theory. So here I have like a Z and Z bar, which are N times N complex matrices, where Z bar is the complex conjugate of Z. And let's say we want to compute a 2-point function of large charge operators in this matrix model. And the result is given by this. And furthermore, let's take the matrix model to be Gaussian. And then the result, this two-point function is given by this integral over the matrices. And so although this isn't like a complex matrix model, which is a little bit more complicated than Hermitian matrix models, you can still express this integral using the eigenvalues. And if you do so, you end up with this expression. So you so these ZJs are eigenvalues for the matrix Z. And instead of usual fundament, you get like a ZI minus ZJ, the absolute value of ZJ minus ZK squared. And then you have some operator insertion and the action, which is this part, just becomes this. And let's consider this integral and take, for example, the simplest possible case where I consider the simplest possible case where operator O is a single trace operator. And in that case, like in terms of eigenvalue, you end up with like inserting this expression into the eigenvalue integral. But because all the other terms are permutation invariant, you can basically replace this sum over k by just by z1 to j and just multiply n, which comes from like a sum over k. Okay. And so if you use this expression, you can clearly see that this expression, this operator O only gives a source term for z1, but not for other eigenvalues. This basically means that like this operator gives some like a non-trivial VEV only to Z1, but not for other eigenvalues, which means that if you take this single trace operator O, then the relevant symmetry breaking pattern is going to be U1 times UN minus one. So this is not the generic symmetry breaking pattern that you might want to get. Okay, any questions so far? So then let's talk about the next simplest operator, which is the double trace operator. So let's take this example. And again, if you reduce it to the eigenvalue, then it's going to be the insertion of this kind of expression, Zn to J1 and Zm to J2, and you sum over n and m. And so you, because you have like a two eigenvalues, you might think that, okay, now we are going to get U1 times U1 times UN minus two, but this is a little bit too quick because if you carefully look at this sum over N and M, then it can be split into two parts. The first one is N not equals to M, and that gives you this expression. Whereas there is also a term in which N and M are equal. And this term gives you the symmetry breaking pattern U1 times U1 times UN minus two, whereas this term gives you the symmetry breaking pattern, which is U1 times UN minus one. So you can see that the correct operator, so if you just insert a double trace operator, and that's not going to give you a single symmetry breaking pattern. So it's more like a superposition of different symmetry breaking patterns. And if you really want to focus on this, like this symmetry breaking pattern, U1 times U1 times UN minus two, then the correct operator that you need to insert is this linear combination, trace Z to J and trace Z to J2, and minus trace of Z to J1 plus J2. And of course, like you can repeat this to more general symmetry breaking patterns. And also I should say that so far I've been only discussing the complex matrix model, which is just a toy model, but something similar should also work for general n equals to super conformal field theory. But general expression for this kind of linear combination is often complicated. Okay, any questions so far? All right, so however, if you go to large M series, there exists a very nice basis in which you can see like a one-to-one correspondence between the symmetry breaking pattern in this like a vacuum moduli space and the operator. And that is what's known as Schur polynomial basis. And the definition of the Schur polynomial basis is given by this. So the Schur polynomial basis is labeled by the Yang tableau, and it's defined using the character of this of the permutation. And here I'm assuming that this Z is the is in the adjoint of UN, and then you just like multiply J of Z fields, and then the gauge indices are contracted in this way. Sorry, is this what I wanted? all right, so, and so I think I need to sum over A and B's in addition to this. And what is nice about this basis is that at least in simple example, like a complex matrix models, and if you take large element, you can clearly see that there is a kind of correspondence between this structure of the Yang tableau and the symmetry breaking pattern. For example, if you consider this Yang tableau with which consists of three long rows, then by doing some analysis in the matrix model, you can see that this LKs, which is the length of each row, roughly corresponds to the magnitude of the source term for the case eigenvalue. So in this particular case of like a Yang tableau with three rows, what you will get is the symmetry breaking pattern corresponding to U1 times U1 times U1 times UN minus three. And furthermore, what's also nice is that if you just consider a single row, then you get some like a Schur polynomial for the totally symmetric representation. And that Schur polynomial operator is in general a bit complicated, but in the large N limit, the leading term is just given by trace of Z to J. And that like is reproducing what I just said like in the two slides back. Okay, so, and in addition, on top of that, nice thing about these Schur polynomial operators is that they also have a very nice holographic description. And so what are the holographic descriptions of the Schur polynomial operators? So in the n equals 4 supremes, so let's consider this like a simplest one, which is a totally symmetric representation, which correspond to the symmetry breaking pattern U1 times UN minus one. And that operator is dual to what's known as the dual giant graviton in ADS 5 times S5. And so this is like a picture of the global ADS. And the dual giant graviton is a spherical D3 brain whose world volume is given by RT times S3, where S3 is inside ADS 5. And so pictorially, it looks like this. And roughly speaking, the size of this spherical giant graviton is given by the charge of the operator. And if you take the large charge limit, then this dual giant graviton becomes bigger and bigger, and it approaches the ADS boundary. And if it approaches the ADS boundary, although the original giant graviton is spherical, you can basically approximate it with a flat D3 brain parallel to the Poincaré ADS boundary. And this is basically, so this flat D3 brain, which is parallel to the Poincaré ADS boundary, is nothing but the dual description of the Coulomb branch of n equals 4 supremes, corresponding to the symmetry breaking pattern U1 times UN minus one. So this basically gives you a geometrical realization of what people are doing in the large charge expansion. So in the large charge limit, it's given by the Coulomb branch description, Coulomb branch moduli space description, and there are some correction coming from the curvature of this D3 brain. Okay, so any questions so far?
Okay. Yeah, actually, I have a quick question. Mm-hmm. So, does it also just mean if I have like a more complicated operator that essentially the general story stays the same? So I have like, I don't know, nested
Right, right. If you have like a two rows, then you have like a two D3 brains. Yeah, nested D3 brains. Okay. So, I should say that on the holography side, there are also other D3 brains. So this one is called dual giant gravitons, but there are also the ones called giant graviton without dual. So interestingly, on the side of ADS-CFT, ADS-CFT provides an effective field theory description in the opposite limit, in which you only have a single column. So this is very hard to interpret from the large charge expansion, because like if you want to interpret this in using this dual giant graviton, then like it's like a bunch of very, very tiny dual giant graviton operator. And this operator, if you write it explicitly, it's given by this kind of expression. So this is just like an Ipsilon tensor. And it's all, you can also interpret it as a subdeterminant operator. In particular, when J is N, this is nothing but the definition of the determinant. And this subdeterminant operator, you can also get it by expanding determinant of identity plus Z. And so although this is very different from what people are analyzing in the large charge expansion, thanks to the holography, we know that this also is given by some dual description using these in terms of D3 brain. But now, previously, the dual giant graviton was extended in ADS, and that was important when you try to make connection with the large charge expansion. But now, giant graviton is actually point-like in ADS5, but it's actually, on the other hand, it's extended in S5. And roughly speaking, the radius of this giant graviton on S5 is given by this expression, J of N. So because S5 is compact, there is like an upper limit on the size of the giant graviton. And that is also consistent with the fact that so there is an upper limit on the size of the totally antisymmetric representation. And so this basically is one of the focus of my talk, but I should just say that like, although ADS-CFT gives, tells us that there should be some like a D3 brain and the excitation on top of it is given by some DBI action, which you might think of it as kind of like a effective field theory description, but it's actually very hard to understand it from field theory, and it would be nice to develop some field theory understanding. Okay, so this was just like an introduction of giant gravitons and D3 brains in the context of ADS-CFT and holography. And now I'm going to move to the main topic of the talk, which is about the correlation function of D brains. Okay, and any questions so far? So, right. So let's, without further delay, let's just give you the quantity that I want to discuss, which is basically the three-point function of two giant graviton operators and one single trace operator. So for simplicity, I'm going to discuss this giant graviton, not the dual giant graviton, but the analysis can be generalized easily to dual giant graviton as well. So this DJ is given by some Schur polynomial, where the argument of the Schur polynomial is y dot phi. So let me, and this OL is the single trace operator. And this y dot phi is just a sum over some linear combination of six scalar contained in n equals 4 CMLs. And we need to take y's to be null. This guarantees that all operators are half BPS. Okay, so the phi's, and I should mention that the phi's are real scalars. And thanks to the supersymmetry, as was shown in this paper, this three-point function is protected, by which I mean it is independent of the coupling constant g mu squared. So this gives us and provides us an ideal setup in which we can actually compare directly the field theory computation and holography. Okay, so let me just give you the field theory prediction, which we actually computed. So the field theory prediction of this quantity is actually a bit complicated, and it's given by a highly non-trivial expression. So here, this cosine theta zero is related to the charge of the giant graviton, and L is the charge of the single trace operator. And this result is complicated because of the complicated combinatorics of Weak contraction. And surprisingly, nobody computed this quantity before us, although it is just like a free field theory computation. And our goal today is to reproduce it from holography. So how to do it? So so in order to do that, we first need to review what is the holographic description of these giant gravitons and a single trace operator. So this giant graviton DJ is basically, like as I said, a D3 brain living in ADS5 times S5 spacetime, whereas this OL is a supergravity mode with Kaluza-Klein momentum L. And because of that, if you want to compute this three-point function, a kind of picture that you would draw is you have some like a D3 brain connecting two operators. This is some classical configuration of the D3 brain. And then you have some quantum fluctuation sourced by this operator O, which is given by the supergravity. And what we are interested in is this like a three-point coupling between the giant graviton and the quantum fluctuation due to supergravity mode. And so in order to compute this quantity, we basically need to compute how the D brain, this classical D brain gets perturbed by a supergravity mode. And this was indeed computed in this paper back in 2011. And the idea is very simple. So as I said, DJ is due to D brain in ADS. And this D brain, the world volume dynamics of this D brain is described by DBI action in a West Zimino term, whereas the DBI action is the usual, like a simple DBI action. Here I'm dropping all the field strengths and just looking at the sigma modulo part. And on the other hand, as I said, OL is a source for the quantum fluctuation of the metric and other fields. And in particular, if you put the operator O3 at the boundary of ADS, then we know that it's going to give you a quantum fluctuation of the metric in ADS. And the form of the fluctuation is roughly given by the bulk to boundary propagator. And similarly, it also gives a fluctuation to the S5 part, and that is given by the spherical harmonics. And the idea of this paper is to perturb the action, this like a DBI plus with Zimino action of the D brain by this small fluctuation, because we basically, in principle, we know what these fluctuations are. And then compute this linear perturbation. And the claim is that that is going to be dual, or that gives you the three-point function. And the rough justification of this argument is that let's suppose that we have some pass integral of the world volume of the D brain fields. And then if you consider the perturbation coming from the operator OL, then it brings down the action part from this pass integral. And furthermore, because in the large N limit, the D brain becomes classical, you can evaluate this pass integral using the saddle point analysis. And that consists of two terms. One is this term evaluated on the saddle point, and the other is this term evaluated on the saddle point. But this term is nothing but the contribution from the two-point function of the D brain. So if you normalize the D brain, you expect that this term vanishes. So the dynamical information is contained in this prefactor, which is precisely the three-point function. However, there are a couple of puzzles in this approach. And first of all, what I just described is insensitive to the difference between the charges of the D brain operators. So I didn't emphasize this, but I'm taking J to be of order N, whereas K to be order one. And this is because the saddle point solution is determined only by J, which is of order N quantity. And this fluctuation delta is just determined by the structure of the operator OL. And the result for, and the second problem is that these people actually computed the result for K equals L using this idea, but actually their conclusion is that the result didn't match with the field theory computation. And this is of course very bad. And I should say that later they came up with a regularization prescription with which they reproduced the field theory answer. But if you look at it carefully, the prescription seems a bit inconsistent. And furthermore, and after this paper, in particular in this paper, they analyze some results for non-extremal correlator for which K is not equal to L. And they found that their results agree. So the holography, the results from holography agree with the results for the gauge theory. But actually, like they analyzed a very, very specific special non-extremal correlator. But in general, you can actually, if you do the computation, you can see that the results still disagree, even for K equals zero. So this poses a problem or puzzle in the computation. And our conclusion is very simple. The previous approaches were missing two important effects. One is the effect which is called orbit average. And the second effect is the contribution from wave function of heavy states, which in this case is deep brain states. And what we found is that once these effects are included, then the results actually agree precisely with the results from field theory. Okay. So now let me explain what this new approach is, but is there any questions so far? Okay, so let me explain what this new approach is. So in order to explain the new approach, let me just first explain it in the simplest quantum mechanical toy model, which was actually discussed in this paper, which discussed the large charge expansion of general CFT. So let's consider some quantum mechanics living on S1. So theta is the coordinate, which runs from 0 to 2 pi. And let's further assume that the Hamiltonian has U1 symmetry, by which I mean the Hamiltonian is invariant under the shift of theta by some constant number. And now I want to compute the kind of overlap, which is the analog of the three-point function in this theory, where J is some heavy state which has like a very large U1 charge J, whereas this O inserted at t equals zero is some light operator. And in particular, I'm going to compute it in the WKB limit in which J is infinite and H bar is zero, whereas H bar to times J is fixed. And the idea again is to use some saddle point approximation. So here again, we have like a path integral of theta, because we are discussing quantum mechanics. And here, what we have is actually like a wave function of this Brass state J plus K. So for convenience, I put the time of this wave function to be plus epsilon, but well, I can later send epsilon to zero without any problem. And now the light operator is some expression, like a functional expression of this theta. And in addition, we have this expression, this wave function contribution coming from the ket state. And on top of that, we have some, the action. And the idea is that in the WKB limit, we can basically approximate this path integral using the saddle point. And let's say that the saddle point, let's denote the saddle point by theta zero to theta zero star. So this is the solution of the saddle point equation with source term J, because now J also scale like one over H bar because of this scaling. So we need to include this source term when you determine the saddle point. And if you do so, then you get this expression evaluated at the saddle point. So this is the expression that I wrote in the previous slide. However, this expression is actually incorrect. And the reason is as follows. So because of U1 symmetry, which corresponds to shifting theta by some finite amount, if you have one solution, which is theta zero star, we can actually construct infinitely many other solutions by simply shifting the value of theta by some constant number. And therefore, actually there are, instead of like one, just one single saddle point solution, we actually have infinitely many, like a moduli, we have actually moduli of solution. And so the correct formula is given by some average over this moduli. And if you write it explicitly, then it's given by this kind of integral. And we just need to replace everything by theta c star. And using this expression and using the fact that action is invariant under this shift, we can simplify this expression into this expression because there is some cancellation between this part and this part. So this is our formula for the WKB approximation of this matrix element, which is given by integral over C. So this integral is what we call orbit average. And this was actually initially discussed by Bajanov and Yannick in the context of heavy, heavy light string correlation functions. And on top of that, we also need to include this wave function term, and that's actually very important. In the, for instance, if you take OP to be e to ip theta, which is the operator with charge P, and if you plug that expression into this master formula, then we basically get this kind of integral. And as a result, we get Kronecker delta. And this is precisely what we need in order to make sure that the charge conservation is satisfied in this matrix element. So this simple computation shows that actually orbit average and the contribution from wave functions are crucial in order to reproduce the charge conservation. Okay. So now what I'm going to do is to just like generalize this to the D-brain case. But before doing that, it's useful to restate this orbit average in terms of some symmetry breaking. And first of all, in the previous example, we only have an integral along like a one U1 direction. But if you consider a theory with multiple commuting charges, then the natural expectation is that you need to average over multidimensional moduli of solution. For example, if you consider a theory with U1 times U1, in general, you need to integrate over the two directions. And the extreme case of that is integrable series, because in integrable series, we have infinitely many charges. So if I say that, you might think that, okay, in the integrable series, we might need infinite dimensional integral. The answer to that question is actually no. And the reason is that if you take some classical solution corresponding to some matrix element, oftentimes that classical solution is invariant under most of those symmetry generators. And in the computation, what we actually need is the symmetries broken by the solution, saddle point solution. And this is also like a very explicit in the way I constructed a new solution. So here I constructed a new solution by acting a symmetry generator, which is broken by the original solution. So similarly, in general cases, what we need to do is to start with a single solution and act the broken generators and then construct new solutions. So in practice, we don't actually need infinitely many directions, but we just need directions which are dual to symmetries broken by the solution X star. And the empirical rule is that dimension of the moduli it corresponds is equal to the number of non-zero commuting charges. Okay. Is there any questions so far? Okay, so let's proceed. So now I'm going to apply this logic to the giant graviton. So for that, it's better to consider like a three-point function as some matrix element. So this is just like a conformal transformation. So instead of considering like a three correlation function of operator, we just put one state as kind of, as we just like interpret one state, one operator as in state and the other operator as out state, and then view it as a matrix element like this. So holographically, this corresponds to start going from like a Poincaré ADS picture to a global ADS picture in which now giant graviton D3 brain like propagates from T equal minus infinity to T equal plus infinity. And I insert light operator at T equal zero. And for the computation, we gauge fix sigma zero, where sigma zero is the world volume time of the D3 brain to be equal to T, which is the global ADS time. So similarly, in the previous case, in the previous approach, this light operator is a source for the quantum fluctuation, and it sources like a fluctuation of the metric. And this fluctuation basically gives rise to an operator on the world volume of the brain. But now, because I inserted the operator at t equals zero and considered a matrix element, now the operator inserted on the world volume is also localized at sigma zero equals zero because of this gauge fixing condition. Therefore, what we have is that is to evaluate, what we need to do is to evaluate the matrix element of the of this operator defined on the world volume of the D3 brain. So I should remind you that in the previous computation, they basically computed the correction to the small perturbation of the action itself. And therefore, they needed to integrate over the full four-dimensional space-time of the world volume of D3 brain. But here, I'm only considering like space-like integration. Okay, so this basically tells you that this matrix element, which is defined in n equals 4 CPMLs, should be dual to this matrix element, which is defined on the world volume of the deep brain, which lives in ADS spacetime. Okay. So now we next evaluate this matrix element semi-classically, and we also need to take into account orbit average and wave function. And orbit average is very simple, especially like if you consider the relation between orbit average and the symmetry breaking. So giant gravitons, as I said, are like a half BPS operator in n equals 4 CPMLs, and it has two non-trivial charges, non-zero charges, which is conformal dimension and U1R charge. And as I said in a couple of slides back, roughly speaking, in most cases, the moduli on which we need to average over, the dimension of the moduli on which we need to average over is given by the number of non-zero charges. So in this case, we need to average over two directions. And one direction is the direction conjugate to this this dimension, conformal dimension of the operator, which is basically like a Euclidean ADS time direction. Whereas another direction is given by some coordinate conjugate to the U1R charge, which is given by S5 angle. And using this, we need to also include a wave function contribution, which is given by this expression. Okay. All right. So, so now with this, it's very now simple to write down the expression. So this matrix element is given by integral over the two direction on which we need to average over. And one direction is S5 angle, one of the S5 angles. So we need to integrate from 0 to 2 pi. And the other direction is the Euclidean ADS time, which is due to dilatation. So we need to integrate over from 0 to infinity. And then we have this operator defined on the world volume of D3 brain, which is given by a three-dimensional integral, space-like integral, spatial integral of the D3 brain world volume. And there are contributions from wave functions. So let me just compare this master formula that we derived with the previous one discussed in this paper. And so in the previous paper, we had this integral over the four-dimensional world volume, space-time world volume of the D-brain. And now this got split into this D tau zero and D three sigma. So this is more like a change of interpretation or change of perspective. On top of that, we have this wave function contribution, and we have integral over this phi zero, which were not present in the previous approach. And if you do the computation in this way, first of all, the result is consistent with the charge conservation. And that's because of this wave function factor and the integral. And furthermore, now, as you can see, the result is sensitive to the finite difference between the operators, between the charges of the giant graviton operators. And on top of that, if you just do the computation, then the result fully agrees with the field theory. And let me just remind you that, of course I can talk about the details of the computation, but I think that's boring. So let me just show you the final result, which of course agrees with the field theory computation. And this is quite remarkable. So on the field theory side, you get this like a hypergeometric function just because of the combinatorics. Roughly speaking, like so all these J and K and Ls are integers. And if you set these to be integers, then actually this 2F1, I think, truncates. And yeah, this 2F1 truncates, and then you just get like some polynomial. And if you do the weak contraction, you basically reproduce this polynomial, like a series expression of the hypergeometric function. On the other hand, if you do the computation holographically, you end up with integral, and you basically reproduce the integral representation of the hypergeometric function. And let me also just mention that this computation can also be generalized to ABGM, both in 2A limit and M0A limit. Okay. So I can also talk about some subtleties regarding the extremal limit, but this is highly technical, so let me just skip it. And if there are people interested, they can ask me at the end of the talk.
And sorry, Shot, I can ask a very nice question.
Yeah, yeah. So
why don't you need to worry about fermions in this computation?
Oh. So the fermion, you mean like a zero modes of fermions?
Yeah.
Or?
Yes.
In principle, you do. Yeah, in principle, you do. And the reason why we didn't need to, so in particular, like what's very much important is the zero mode of fermion, because like these integrals are like a zero modes of bosons. So similarly, you might worry about zero modes of fermions. But we don't need to worry about this because we know that this solution of the D-brain satisfies the BPS condition. And if it satisfies the BPS condition, I think like the fermion zero mode integral can be, well, it just becomes one. And if it doesn't satisfy the BPS condition, basically if you include as BPS, if you do the integral of zero modes of fermion, you just get zero. Or let me put it in another way. So, the fermion zero modes are related to the supersymmetry, right? Like much like these zero modes are related by bosonic part of the conformal symmetry. But we know that this solution, D-brain solution, is invariant, like under those supersymmetry, relevant supersymmetry. So that is why we don't need to worry about zero modes of fermion. Basically, there is no like a fermionic zero modes.
In other words, we don't know the vertex operator in full detail, including prefactor normally, right?
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I'm concerned about it.
Right. So
is there some ratio implicit and some things cancel?
Right. Yeah, let me think. So that is going to be, I think that is going to be one over n correction, because if you have some like fermions, so this is roughly speaking like a just like a small modification of evaluating the operator in the semi-classical limit. And that is like a very, very classical computation. But of course, like there are correction to that, which is take some field inside this expression and then like connect it using the propagator. But the propagator that we need to use is the propagator defined on the word volume of dBrain. And it comes with like a one over n factor if you carefully like analyze it. So that's why we didn't need to worry about it at this order of the one over n correction. So this is a result valid in leading large n limit. Okay. So right. So let's not talk about the subtleties, and then let me just like us conclude or in this with discussions, speculations, and random results. So what are lessons of this computation? I just basically presented one simple computation, which gives another although highly non-trivial, but it's just another precision test of ADS CFT. But you might say that like anyway, we believe that ADS CFT is correct. So like maybe some people say that there is no point in adding another item to the long list of like a precision test of ADS CFT. But I think it's worth emphasizing that we could reproduce off a diagonal three-point function. In particular, like the result was sensitive to finite k difference by using some semi-classical approximation. And this is because like one might say that the semi-classical computation is only sensitive to the charges of order n, and it is insensitive to microscopic difference. But that expectation is not correct. And so that's what we basically showed in the computation. And so given this, it might be interesting to try to ask this question, which is like, can we do something similar for black holes instead of dBrains? So to discuss that, let me just briefly review what we expect for black holes. So there are like important differences between the dBrain states and black hole states. Unlike dBrain state, which basically correspond to a single state, the states dual to black holes come with exponentially large degeneracy, which is e to n squared. And maybe the conservative viewpoint is that whatever computation you do in the semi-classical limit using black holes, it only captures average or universal part of the of such states. And this is related to what people call, what is called a eigenstate summarization hypothesis, which basically says that like if you consider a matrix element of highly excited states and take all to be some simple operator, then the diagonal part is given by some thermal expectation value of the operator O, whereas off diagonal part is exponentially suppressed and given by some expression where RMN is some random variable with unit variance. And if you just like take this off diagonal part and then let's say like average over the states, like what this conservative viewpoint says, and then we basically just get zero because of the average over a random variable. So you might say like, okay, we won't be able to get anything interesting from the off-diagonal part, but given our success of computing some off-diagonal quantity using the semi-classical limit of the dBrain, maybe it's useful to still, it might be interesting to still ask this question. But let me just like say a few things about ETH. I'm a little bit over time, but I'm going to finish very soon. So this eigenstate summarization hypothesis basically predicts that the off-diagonal part is suppressed by exponential of minus n squared over 2 in the case of holographic series. But we need to be careful about for which states this prediction is correct. For example, if you consider two-dimensional CFT, and if you take these two heavy states to be like a highly excited states, but in the same Verma module, then actually you can compute this quantity and show that this is this off-diagonal matrix element is not exponentially suppressed, but it's power law suppressed, and that's discussed in this paper. On the other hand, if you have average over, like using the modular bootstrap, you can say something about average of the off-diagonal part. And using the modular bootstrap, you can clearly show that the average of the off-diagonal part is exponentially suppressed. But this is only like a statement about average of the off-diagonal part. So we need to, so if you really want to analyze some specific matrix element, it's a bit, well, we need to be careful what is the prediction from ETH. So this is some, this was some remark about black hole states, but let me just also say that before analyzing black holes, there are also some simpler setup, which are dual to states, heavy enough to deform geometry, but in the same, in some sense, the same universality class as giant gravitons. And those are states, for example, called Lin-Looney Maldacena geometry in the case of n equals 4 supermuse. And they are basically like a very, very heavy half BPS operator. And there are also like a, something similar in the case of ADS3 CFT2, which is often called fuzzball geometry, which has like a 1/4 of supercharges, which preserves 1/4 of supercharges. And so this Lin-Looney Maldacena geometry is basically like a classified, okay, so classified by some kind of black and white patterns. And this black and white pattern basically determines the structure of the geometry. And I'm not going to talk about the details of the this like a relation between black and white patterns and the geometry, but let me just say that in this black and white pattern, if you take non-rotationally symmetric pattern, then the corresponding geometry is time dependent. In particular, it breaks like a dilatation which corresponds to the time translation in global ADS. So they, this basically means that if you start from this kind of LLM geometry, we do need to orbit average in order to get a result for energy eigenstate. However, what's a little bit different from D-brain case is that there are also LLM geometry, which is rotationally symmetric. And those geometries are actually time independent and does not break dilatation. So this one, it seems like we don't need to do the average. And this is a little bit funny because in order to construct the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, there are two ways to, it seems like there are two ways to get it. The first is to start from non-rotationally symmetric geometry and then average over it. And the second is to just start from rotational symmetric patterns. So it's, so this basically, well, I don't have a very, I don't have anything concrete to say, but like it seems like there are, like there is a many to one correspondence between operator and geometry. And there was also comment about fuzzball, but let me just skip it now. And ideally, so what would be nice to achieve is to do some kind of like orbit average also for the black holes. And in order to do that, we first need to identify the orbit with which we integrate. And perhaps, so this is really just speculative, but like perhaps one candidate is a like a horizon asymptotic group or horizon soft hair. So, and ideally we want to have something like this expression where you integrate over the horizon symmetric group and then you multiply some wave function of soft hairs and then compute this off-diagonal quantities. Of course, I don't know if such a formula exists or this is a valid expectation, but it's probably, it's anyway interesting to ask such questions. Okay, so, and with that, let me just end and ask for questions.
All right, thanks a lot, Chota. So Yeah, I guess we can go over to the questions, and I would just ask people if they want to ask a question to unmute themselves and ask the question. So, okay, let me. I'd actually be interested in what you had to say about the fuzzball side. So if you.
Okay. Right. So the fuzzball geometry, especially if you consider 1/4 BPS one, so these are not the ones relevant for the Strominger-Waffe counting. So the ones relevant for the Strominger-Waffe counting is 1/8 BPS ones. So this one is actually a bit like analog of LLM geometry. What I wanted to say here is that in the past, there have been many works on precision tests of actually this quantity, this three-point function. And the nice thing about this is that this quantity is protected. So in principle, you can compare between the holography and the field theory. And the field theory side is often computed using the symmetric orbifold CFT. And in particular, by doing this computation in the Skenderis and Taylor concluded that the fuzzball state must be given by sum over R charge eigenstate, because otherwise they couldn't reproduce this quantity computed on the holography side. But when they do this computation, they basically didn't do the orbit average. They actually took the fuzzball geometry very seriously and then just evaluate the graviton perturbation using that geometry. And this is the converse. This is actually consistent with what I was saying, but it's more like a converse of our viewpoint, because we were saying that our charge eigenstate is actually sum over various geometry or integration over the various geometry. Whereas they are saying the fuzzball geometry is a sum over our charge eigenstate. But from the point of view of comparison with the field theory side, it's often a cleaner to look at the R charge eigenstate rather than just considering a complicated sum over R charge eigenstate. And so this new viewpoint might be useful for cleaning up the computation people did. And in addition, we can possibly generalize it to the off-diagonal three-point functions.
All right, thanks.
Do you think, Shota, this also has implications for more than for cases that involve 3 heavy states, for example, or 4 heavy states? Are these averages important there as well?
And my answer will be no. So for the right. So let me just go to some formula. So this is our master formula, and we have integration over the moduli of the solution, and we have light operator O. But if this operator gets heavy, then this integral is dominated by some saddle point. So we don't need to integrate over it, we just need to find a saddle point of this integral.
Is there some sign of integrability when you compute these correlation functions of determinant like operators? Or a priori, it's very non-planar. Is there a way of still thinking in integrable sense, for example? Is there a dilatation operator or anything when we do go beyond BPS?
Right. So for the diagonal correlation function, so take J, k equals 0. And so for the diagonal circuit function, take k equals 0 and then take O to be non-BPS operator. And that is integrable, and it's given by some overlap between the boundary state and the string state. Mm-hmm. And that's also the case for APGM.
But that's only for this special sure polynomials, right? For the generic one, right. We don't know.
Right, okay. So for n equals 4 CPM mills, that's true only for the maximal, what's called maximal giant graviton, which have like a J equals N. And for ABGM, we actually have evidence that it's true for non-maximal giant graviton as well. And it's also probably true also for dual giant graviton in the case of ABGM.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I have a curiosity. I saw in your paper that for now that you mentioned ABGM, did you understand how to do three-point functions using integrability in ABGM with hexagons? Or?
No, not yet. but we can compute it. Especially like, so we know how to construct the beta wave function for SU4 alternating spin chain.
Yeah.
And that was never done before. And with that, we can compute like a non-BPS, BPS, BPS three-point function.
Mm-hmm.
And previously that was not possible because if you just look at SU2 sector, that three-point function is always zero. Mm-hmm. So we are hoping that that gives a clean data for developing hexagonal approach.
Mm-hmm. So you have the analog of this Mathcalé, the sum of.
Right, right. Well, okay. We hope to get it.
Nice.
All right, let me just stop the recording.
Okay.